I was like kind of mentally preparing myself for Attack of the Clones. Like, oh, fuck, fuck, fuck. And then I looked at the calendar and it was like Pitch Perfect. And I was like, oh, all right.
Be up front. I didn't rewatch it. I've seen it a million fucking times.
I did. And I'm glad I did. Because I like that movie. And I was like, yeah.
I know, I do too.
I watched like the bonus features. I was like, yeah, let's do this. Let's get balls deep. What's up? This is Movies On Up, America's favorite dad in a spirited comedy. As far as I'm concerned, America's favorite dad is sitting right across from me. That's Mr. Dave Bisella.
Eating a pudding pop.
Indeed, probably doing all sorts of other nefarious things. That's Dave. I'm Ryan. We are Movies On Up. America's favorite dad in a spirited comedy is our tagline for this week. I feel like you've got a couple pretty good hints up front what that might be. And when I tell you what episode we're doing this week, if you can't already tell from the title.
I mean, if you get drugged, maybe you would forget the clues. But
it's possible.
Careful what you drink.
Around America's favorite dad. Yeah, that's the movie. Ghost Dad is the movie. If you want to win a prize package, which could be full of God only knows what, some Jell-O, some sweaters, I don't know, send your guess, which should be Ghost Dad, to us in one of the following ways in an email, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave Ghost Dad on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet Ghost Dad at Dave at moviesonup on the Twitter. If you are incorrect, I don't know what else to do for you, but if you are correct and if we choose you, you'll win the prize package, which I'm sure will be the greatest prize package we've ever given away because this is the most
difficult. Please just post Ghost Dad on our Facebook page. No contacts, nothing else. Just post Ghost Dad on our Facebook page.
That'll make us feel nice. Not that I'll ever know because I don't know how the hell to get on the Facebook. But. Ah, yeah. Well, somebody will know, that's for sure. Our intern will know. At any rate, we have chosen Ghost Dad as our tagline contest for this week because we're going to be giving our top five ghost story movies, sort of as a nod to the reboot, I guess, relaunch of the Poltergeist flick. Gil Keenan's Poltergeist hits theaters this week with Sam Rockwell and Rosemary DeWitt. We talked about it a bit in our summer preview, or at least I talked about it. I like a lot of the people that are involved, Rockwell, Raimi as a producer. I don't know really how this is going to turn out, but we thought, hey, what the hell? Let's dive into ghost movies. Specifically, we've done, October is always a big celebration of horror where we've done some very specific genres like favorite zombie movies, favorite monster movies, but I don't think we've ever actually done spooky ghost movies.
We did haunted house movies.
Oh, have we done that?
Yeah.
I might have some crossover. Not a lot. But at least one.
I knew we had done haunted house. I didn't know if we had done ghost stories before. So I tried to reach a little bit.
I don't know what we're doing week to week, let alone what we've done weeks ago.
Yeah, I don't. Oh, I have no idea. But something seemed familiar. And I'm pretty sure we both had Beetlejuice number one on our haunted house stories. So
that's a possibility.
That sounds about right.
But I did not put Beetlejuice on this one.
I left it off also. But I tried to go a little different. I tried to keep it non-horror movies.
A ghost movie that's a non-horror movie.
Yeah, and I didn't go ghost.
I see. I would not have gone.
I picked the five others.
Did you do Ghost Dad?
We'll have to wait and see.
Well, we're going to find out pretty quickly if it's your number five. Dave, what is your number five spookiest, scariest, favoritest ghost movie?
My number five, it did show up on another list previously when we did Denzel Washington movies. I can't remember if it made my list or if it wasn't also ran, but it is 1990s Heart Condition.
I think it made the list for what it's worth.
Starring Bob Hoskins and Denzel Washington. Denzel Washington plays a lawyer that gets murdered. Bob Hoskins is dying and needs a heart transplant, so they give him Denzel Washington's heart. So Denzel comes back to haunt him and help him solve his murder. It's funny. You don't see comedy Denzel hardly ever. He's always got that humor to him, but he's actually pretty decent at comedy. And Two Guns is probably the closest he's come to it in a while.
Which was pretty entertaining.
I liked
no
it.
Ghosts.
No ghosts.
Two guns, zero ghosts.
Yes. That title's misleading also. There were a lot more than two guns in that.
At times,
they each had two each.
That's four guns.
It should have been called at least two guns at any given time. But Heart Condition, it's fun. I like Bob Hoskins. I always thought there was something about him. When you're somebody of Bob Hoskins' stature, he's not that Hollywood leading man type. But the dude was headlining movies for a good portion of his career. So, I mean, there's something special when you can look at somebody like that. And there's something about them that they're a leading man. I've always liked Bob Hoskins on film. And him and Denzel together as a racist cop with a black man's heart and a black man's ghost haunting him. It's a lot of fun. It's a good movie.
My number five also, it's a comedy. What the hell? I believe it is definitely the only, well, it's the most comedy that I have on my list. It is from 1988, starring Bill Murray and Karen Allen. It's Richard Donner's Scrooged. Obviously, this one's kind of a send-off of A Christmas Carol, but I think it's kind of a meta take on A Christmas Carol. Murray plays sort of a rotten TV executive kind of guy who's in charge of running a live Charles Dickens adaptation on his station. He's kind of a dick. I didn't have the best childhood, so of course he's a bit jaded. He's sort of a real-life Scrooge who's tasked with bringing the actual Scrooge, or the quote-unquote actual Scrooge, to the small screen. This is where I might get myself in a little bit of trouble, but I actually think one of the big parts that I've always had a problem with A Christmas Carol is the character of Scrooge, because he's a dick from front to back. At no point do I think you really want him to change his ways for his betterment. You want things to work out because you don't want Tiny Tim to end up in a tiny box. So that's why we're all rooting for Scrooge to have a change of heart. But I think that Murray as Frank Cross is probably just as much of a dick, but he's cynical and somehow gruffly charming, which I think Murray is perhaps of most actors uniquely suited to do. It's absolutely in his wheelhouse. And I think that makes his Scrooge a bit more likable and a guy that you kind of do want to root for throughout the entirety of the movie. As far as the ghosts go, Carol Kane, I think, does bring quite a bit of life, if you'll pardon the expression, and physicality to the Ghost of Christmas Present. She just kind of slaps the shit out of him through her entire scene with him. And I think the skeleton dude as the future Christmas was kind of a cool, he meets him in the elevator. It kind of lets you know exactly where things are headed. I think he's being chased with a shotgun at that point. So he's a very real specter of death. And if he doesn't change his ways, he's going to end up dead. And there's only going to be like two people at his funeral. The movie does feel kind of super dated at this point. There's cameos from Mary Lou Retton and Bobby Goulet. But I still think it's a faithful and relatable telling of what I think at times can be kind of a dusty old classic.
Yeah, this is also my number four. So instead of piggybacking off that, I'll just keep talking about it. It's great. And you nailed it exactly about Scrooge isn't a well-written character. As beloved as that story is, he's very one-dimensional and you don't really care about him. But Bill Murray is the one to bring that to life, to where even if Bill Murray's being the biggest dick ever, like even a movie like St. Vincent from last year, there's not a lot of redeeming qualities about him, but you want there to be. Like, there's just something there. You have a sense that there's something there that makes this guy special. And he brought that to it. And the fact that it was very meta, I think, worked out awesome. Like,
in 1988, not that they couldn't figure out meta then, but I don't think that was really...
It wasn't what it is now. Yeah. And it worked. It wasn't meta for meta's sake. All right, here's this Scrooge-like character tasked with bringing on a live Christmassy, or whatever that story's called, Christmas Tale.
Christmas Carol, I believe.
Christmas Carol on, what was it, Christmas Eve?
Something like that, yeah. And he gets visited by the actual ghosts from the play.
I mean, it's a great... For a Christmas movie, it's fantastic. For a ghost story, it's pretty damn good. You know, overall, for a movie, I really like it. It's Bill Murray at his peak. Like, this is when Bill Murray was doing some of the best stuff. And no matter what kind of character he was playing, he was likable. Like, what about Bob? Bob is such a terrible, annoying guy, but how do you not love Bob watching What About Bob? And
he's been accused of playing one-dimensional characters a lot, but whatever that dimension is, he does it well and with a side of likability.
See, I don't like that critique of Murray. Every time I hear it, it's way off base. He's just so good at what he does that he kind of soaks it up. And, you know, it's not one-dimensional, because if you look at characters like Bob and What About Bob, or his character in Scrooged or Venkman, you know, you're talking three levels of confidence. And okay, maybe Stripes, and look at Caddyshack. I mean, he does different characters. He just has this charm about him that you can't dislike him no matter how hard he tries. So Scrooge is my number four.
My number four, not a comedy. It's almost kind of not even really a ghost movie. It's more of a courtroom drama. It is 2005's Exorcism of Emily Rose, directed by Scott Derrickson, starring Laura Linney, Tom Wilkinson, Jennifer Carpenter. I gave this one some extra credit for being real. It's loosely based off the case of Annalise Michael, who died in 1975, about a year after being exorcised. I don't really know if that's the actual word, but having an exorcism performed on her person. She did end up dead. That is a fact.
I believe it's exorcismed.
Exorcismed. Exorcism. Sure, exorcismed. As much as, like,
unless
I said,
it's a girl performing a exorcism on another girl, then it's exorcised.
Thank you, ladies. He'll be here for the rest of the podcast, at least. Or actually, probably for the next two, because we're going to record two more after this.
It's February 23rd right now. Just to look behind the curtain, it is February 23rd. I don't know how far in the future this is. There is snow on the ground, and I just had Valentine's Day last week.
Happy Valentine's Day, Dave. About half of it takes place in the courtroom where Laura Linney's trying to get a jury to not put Wilkinson in jail because, spoiler alert, Emily Rose ends up dead after this exorcismed, I think. While you don't technically see any ghosts like you would see in Scrooged or the other movies that are on my list, you have to give Carpenter a ton of credit. When she was possessed by what you would assume is some sort of spirit or demon, she doesn't go full-on Linda Blair, but her possession scenes are really her physicality coming to the role. They didn't really do a lot of like effects. So her kind of contorting herself and the facial expressions, that's all 100% her. And I think that takes quite a bit. I would assume it probably takes quite a bit out of you. Whether you believe in ghosts or exorcisms or whatever, I think the courtroom side is pretty interesting. To me, it felt like a Dateline episode where the entirety of the time you're trying to figure out not necessarily whether or not he did it, but whether or not he's going to jail for it. Like, what is the jury going to think? Spoiler alert, in real life, Annalise's parents and two priests were charged and convicted of manslaughter. I think they had suspended sentences, but guilty. That's my number four, Exorcism of Emily Rose.
My number three goes to 1989, directed by Phil Alden Robinson, starring Kevin Costner, is Field of Dreams. When you have a big backyard, sometimes you might see ghosts, Shoeless Joe Jackson.
That's all it takes.
Yeah.
If you have a big backyard, they will come.
And if you build it, you know who else might come? Ghost Dad. So, Field of Dreams. I'll admit, I watched this movie when I was 10 years old. I haven't seen it since, but I remember enough about it, and I think that's kind of telling about the movie. Like, I remember the line at the end. Plus, I was always fascinated with the Black Sox, and that's who comes, is the Black Sox. So, I mean, if you're summoning a supernatural baseball team, why not make it cheaters?
I don't think they actually cheated. I think they just threw the World Series.
Not everybody's a good cheater.
I guess that's right.
I don't know. It's a good movie. It's a good ghost story because, you know, he talks to Ray Liotta as Shoeless Joe throughout the whole movie, and then Ghost Dad shows up. A lot of other ghosts come out. James Earl Jones, pretty awesome. This is Costner being his Costneriest.
I have sort of a problem with this movie. I don't get contrarian a lot just for the sake of doing it, but I hate baseball. And this is a movie, it's not about necessarily baseball, it's about the father-son relationship. But I feel like that's kind of hokey. I don't want to shit talk this movie because I know a lot of people love it. I just can't take it. I cannot deal with it.
I hate baseball, but I also hate cornfields. So, I mean,
this is a movie about baseball and cornfields.
It's about a movie about baseball destroying a cornfield to build a baseball field. So,
two things you hate, one of which is getting destroyed,
though. So.
Okay, all right. I see how the math is adding up on this. We're adding up to my number three, which is a ghost story from a director who's got a flick coming out this summer. His name is Alejandro Amodar. It is 2001's The Others, starring Nicole Kidman and a couple kids. I've often said, and I will probably say it again before this episode is through, that I love the old gothic horror movies of the 50s and the 60s. I've left most of these off the list because I've mentioned some of them before, and if I start mentioning them, I'll just kind of get off track and we'll never finish. While I wouldn't classify this as that same type of movie, I think it's a pretty close kissing cousin to the Hammer films that I love so much. I think the director does a phenomenal job in creating a normal yet spooky atmosphere without relying on jump scares, which seem to have come into vogue in the mid to late aughts and don't seem to be leaving us anytime soon. I feel like if you want to make a ghost movie or a haunted house movie or really any kind of horror movie, it's very easy to be lazy and to fall into that trap of fast movement along with a very loud sound just to kind of get that visceral reaction out of people. And I don't necessarily think that that's filmmaking as much as it is just kind of preying on our instincts as animals. I don't think that there's a lot of that here. The characters, especially Kidman's character, is very well developed, her relationship with her children. And I think that her performance really kind of helps this movie stick out of what was kind of a morass and still continues to be this quagmire of movies. We talked about it in the summer episode where I don't know The Conjuring from Insidious from The Happening.
Conjuring, Insidious, Sinister.
Yeah, these movies kind of all tend to make their way into one giant movie in my head, but not this one. This one sticks out, and I think for a couple of reasons. I think the Nicole Kidman was really, really good in it. I liked the direction, and the story is kind of interesting in and of itself.
This one also came out around a time when haunted house movies were kind of in a resurgence. You had the House on Haunted Hill, The Haunting, The Skeleton Key. Like, you had...
And, I mean, two of those are remakes of old-ass movies, which I like a lot.
Yeah, and I mean, it was like the Haunted House movie was trying to come back, and this was kind of after. This fell a couple years after those two failed to, like, make Haunted House a thing.
Yeah, I feel like that was late 90s. Like, 13 Ghosts is another one.
13 Ghosts
is
another one. Yeah, and then, like, Skeleton Key, others kind of came out a little later. But The Others is legit. Guillermo del Toro is producing really, really good stuff. And The Others feels like an Americanized version of one of his movies. Because, like, The Orphanage is a fantastic ghost movie. The Others is almost like a dumbed-down version to an extent with that creepy...
I think it's more straightforward. I don't know that it's dumbed down. It's just, here's the plot. Here are your characters. Here's the problem they have.
Yeah, so it sticks out as far as... For American mainstream horror, sometimes I have trouble considering ghost stories horror movies because they're so different. But, I mean, for being mainstream and having a big star power behind it, it's better than most of the crap we get. It's better than, like, that, what was it, Dreamhouse or Intruders or any of those kind of movies.
They're literally a dime a dozen.
Yeah, and The Others does stand above The Others.
It's worth a quarter at least.
My number... I have no idea anymore.
Two.
We talked about Bill Murray being his Bill Murrayist and the Scrooge and Kevin Costner being very Costnery in Field of Dreams. My number two is a movie that relies very, very heavy on its lead, and that lead happens to be a 1993 Robert Downey Jr., who, again, top of his game at that time, like just watching Robert Downey Jr. on screen, even now, but especially then, was just something special. In Heart and Souls, he just a dude that now has his four guardian angels from his childhood have come back to try to right some wrongs. And it Alfred Woodard, Tom Sizemore, Kira Sedgwick, and Charles Grodin. Charles Grodin kind of steals the movie. He's kind of the highlight outside of Robert Downey Jr. And you also have David Paymer, Elizabeth Shue. It's a 90s romantic comedy. It's a very 90s movie. It has all the tropes. It just happens to have four ghosts that are complicating things instead of parents or being a hooker or whatever. So it is a very typical 90s romantic comedy, but that's back when they put a little bit more thought into romantic comedies and try to give them at least some sort of angle other than just these two people hate each other, and I bet they don't by the end. So... this was before that lazy way, and it actually put some effort into it. Again, just watching Robert Downey Jr. at that phase of his career is a treat. And then to see Charles Grodin, he's really, really good in this movie. So Heart and Souls is a lot of fun.
I feel like it's a good introduction to Grodin because he kind of, at least for guys of our age, we kind of came at the tail end of Grodin. It kind of gives you a little bit of an example of what he was doing for about 20, 25 years, even before then. My number two is sort of an offbeat flick It's also my newest flick on here. It's from 2013. It's Stephen Sommers's Odd Thomas, starring Anton Yelchin, Addison Timlin, and Willem Dafoe. I got some kind of reaction out of Dave. So
that was on my also-rans, but I forgot to write it down.
Okay.
So I'm glad I'll get to talk about it.
Yeah, definitely. Apparently, it's based on a book.
A book series.
I would not know. Written by Dean Koontz, who does some books. I've seen that name before, so he's an author of some rapport. What I love most about the movie is absolutely Yelchin and Addison Timlin. I think they're adorable in it. It didn't come to my mind immediately as a quote-unquote ghost movie, although it absolutely is. Odd Thomas is a fry cook who has the ability to see dead people, which is, you know, not unlike a lot of people who see dead people in movies. But I had forgotten that that was sort of his thing. I mean, that's what the entire movie is. But the chemistry between those two on screen is so good that that's really what stuck with me, not the rest of the crap. And by rest of the crap, I mean the actual plot of the film. I just liked watching those two. I thought they were adorable on screen together. I don't think that Anton Yelchin is ever going to get to the point where he's going to be leading super successful Hollywood movies. But I think if you have a character that's maybe a little bit out there, I mean, this, say what you want about Fright Night. Like, I think he did what he needed to do. Anton Yelchin, if his career is being in Star Trek and leading horror movies, I'm cool with it because I think he's 2 for 2 in my book.
I just like him as a leading man. That Charlie Bartlett was pretty fun,
too. Yeah, that's true, too.
This movie, it's a tough one. It's worth a watch. I think that's a fair assessment. It's definitely worth a watch. This was supposed to be his tentpole. This was supposed to be the anti-Yelchin is leading a franchise. It went through development hell. It was supposed to be.
There was a lawsuit involved.
Yeah. And the thing is there's a lot of books here. There's a lot of stories. And
the end of the movie is set up for
this
it
movie,
to be.
This movie is an origin story, pretty much. Like, this movie is basically introducing the character of Odd Thomas. And it was good enough that I would like to see more, but we're not going to. And Addison Timlin, she is so cute, but she is one of the worst actresses I think I've ever seen. She's not, even in this, she's passable. I think that's more to the credit of Yelchin, because they play off each other so well. But even just her delivery, how she talks, it's like she's in a speakeasy when everybody else is in 2013. She does bring that charm, and it kind of works for her character there, although I don't know that it was her doing a character thing. I just think that's her line delivery. But it's darker than you think. It's got some humor. Like, I think it's a little more humorous than you would expect. For as dark as it goes, but it's just not as good as I wanted it to be. It's better than I thought it'd be, but not as good as I wanted it to be.
This is another one that probably suffers from me having no expectations. It's not like I read the books. So
I didn't read the books, but yeah. I like Yelchin. I've liked Yelchin for, he was on this show on Showtime with Hank Azaria in like early 2000s, and I've liked him since. He was in that Tom Wilkinson transvestite movie that was great. He's done awesome stuff for his whole career, and I'd like to see him. It's a cool character. The idea of the movie is cool. The execution isn't all there. There's some good stuff about it, but there's a lot of misses with it. And I think it's worth a watch, though, and I think it would build up to a really good sequel. This is such an obscure, like, take a movie like Jack Brooks' Monster Slayer. Yeah, it's not a good movie, but I would absolutely see the sequel. Because you're spending a whole movie setting up this character, but you're kind of counting your chickens before they hatch, or whatever that phrase is saying. It's like you're setting up for future movies, but
right,
you got to make people like this one first.
It's almost like they had a 3-picture deal ready to go, and then had the rug pulled out from under them.
Yeah, and I don't blame them, but I wouldn't mind seeing a second one, but I'm not going to hold my breath on it.
I'm going to be far less interested in seeing a second one.
I like where it was going.
Based off what I liked about the first one.
Yeah, they'll be all right. My number one is probably the closest I had to breaking my rules. I said I avoided horror movies. This is the closest to a horror movie, but I let it slide because it's also a kid's movie. It is 2012's Paranorman, directed by Chris Butler and Sam Fell. About a little kid that sees dead people, which we've talked about plots like that before. But this movie was good. I mean, it's got that stop animation. It's got the Leica Studio style.
It's got some things going for it.
Anna Kendrick's in it. Sure. Casey Affleck's in it. Cody Smith McPhee's really, really good in the lead. Christopher Mintz pass. Like, the cast is great, John Goodman, and they're used well. But it's a really, really good story. It's a good movie. It's one of those kids' movies. I mean, we have so many of them now. We're spoiled. Like, as people old enough to have children, we're spoiled now that we live in an age where all the kids' movies are, most of the kids' movies are made with us in mind also. This movie's really good. It gets really dark, but it's at the center of it, it's a story about being yourself and not caring about other things and not being a dick. There's a gay character, which it doesn't make a big deal out of being a gay character, just kind of a throwaway thing that's like, yeah, fuck you, we're throwing a gay character in a kid's movie and you can't do anything about it. There's a lot of good things about this movie, and I'm glad it got the Oscar nomination that it did. I didn't expect it to win, but it's such a good movie that I feel like kind of went somewhat under the radar. It also came out, I think people just kind of lump this and Corpse Dog or whatever, Frankenweenie, just kind of lump them together because they came out within a few months of each other. But this is so good. It's a legitimately good movie. I'm not saying it's a good kids movie. It's a legitimately good movie, and I absolutely adore the hell out of this movie. And it gets downright creepy at times, too.
My number one, speaking of kids, does involve two kids, but I would not call this a kids movie. It is from 1961. It's Jack Clayton's The Innocents, starring Deborah Kerr and Michael Redgrave. I said I left off most of the gothic horror joints that I love, but The Innocents, I kind of feel like is the best of the bunch. And I don't think I've talked about it yet, so that's kind of a double barrel for not leaving it off this list. Whereas I praised the others for not using a bunch of jump scares or CG to compensate for a lack of atmosphere actually built through movie making, The Innocents takes that and multiplies it about sevenfold. They use lighting, which is a thing you can do. Some really super creepy ass music. It was one of the first movies to actually use like synthesized music. And it sounds like they don't know what the hell they're doing, but it works because it's super creepy. What I think is really good direction by Clayton to provide a really super good, gothic, creepy sort of vibe. And then when you add the creepy storyline of these two kids, two children, that are being possessed by their former caregivers who were boning each other, and then these kids our brother and sister, that's a super creepy plot. And I would say that it's kind of an off-putting premise even. I don't endorse that behavior, but I do endorse this movie. Kerr, as the governess of these two children, does a really, really good job in the movie. She kind of starts to lose her shit the closer we get to the end as she's trying to figure out how to break the possession of these kids without exercising or exorcising them. It's suspenseful. Suspense maybe more than the horror. And I think that with a good ghost movie, I think that's what we get. I think it's the suspense. And I think this is absolutely the best example I have of suspense on my list. And I think it's why it's as high as it is on my list, why it's number one, because it embodies kind of everything I like about like my favorite time period of ghost movies, which was the 60s, very specifically what was coming from Great Britain in the 60s. And I think this is probably the best of that bunch. So it's my default number one. The Innocents. Outside of Odd Thomas, did you have any other also-rans that we didn't quite get to?
Yeah, a couple that were borderline horror that I couldn't. The Sixth Sense is an obvious one.
Are there ghosts in that movie?
Dead people.
Oh, shit. All right.
Yeah, Misha Barton spitting up and stuff.
I was being facetious.
There's another ghost. I forget who played him, though. The Frighteners.
Yeah. The Frighteners was on. Hard.
I kind of left it off because I thought it'd be on for you. It's like a comedy and a horror. It's like three different movies in one.
And they're great.
Yeah.
I know we've talked about The Frighteners before. I don't know why. Maybe it was zombie movies.
I don't know.
But yeah, Frighteners is great.
Movies, maybe. Yeah. Ghostbusters, Beetlejuice. This one's not a ghost movie, but there's some of my favorite movie ghosts was in Stardust. All the brothers and everything. they were really funny throughout the whole thing. There is a running gag throughout the whole movie about the ghosts that I found really enjoyable, but there's such a small part of the movie I couldn't justify it. And then a straight-up horror movie, Lake Mungo, I just try to bring that movie up every chance I get, because I think it's a fantastic ghost story. If you like truly creepy, like, slow burn ghost, the payoff in it's pretty awesome.
Aside from the super obvious ones like the Beetlejuice and the Ghostbusters that we have to kind of specifically leave off every list, I don't know if it's just the years doing it to me, but I remember actually kind of liking the Christina Ricci Casper flick. I didn't think that was too bad as a kid's movie. Obviously, it's about the ghosts, and man, his ghost uncles were dicks.
See, I remember seeing it in theaters, but I don't remember much about it, so I couldn't really.
My sister was super into it, so I mean, goodness knows we had the VHS, and I'd probably seen it about 100 times. And maybe it was just I preferred that to like The Little Mermaid or whatever else she wanted to watch. But she liked her some Christina Ricci flicks, and Casper was one of them.
This is a weird list because I know I missed some. It's such a wide thing. I know, even thinking outside of not doing horrors, like, I know that there's movies out there that if you remind me of, I'll kick myself for not thinking of it. I haven't thought of them.
Yeah, so. There's so many. It's a lot of times it's our quote unquote five favorite, but it might just be the five favorite ones that we can kind of think of at any given time. But if there is a ghost story, if you really like The Fog and you want to tell us about it, that's great. I love me some Adrian Barbeau. Let's talk about it. You can email us moviesonup@gmail.com. Leave some stuff on our Twitter page or whatever that's called, @moviesonup on the Twitter, or you can get at our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup. Leave Ghost Dad on there, because that'll be fun. That didn't make either of our lists, but it did make our tagline contest. Next week, not a list episode. It is a discussion episode. It is our second in our ongoing series of Star Wars flicks. Next week, we will be doing Attack of the Clones, Episode 2. So get ready for that, folks. We're going to have a ghastly good time there. But until next week,
keep it up.